Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NWA Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Laufer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NWA Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Today we've got a great guest. You know, we talk a lot about China. We talk a lot about security issues in the Indo-Pacific, but we've never actually had a Taiwanese expert to talk about these issues and to sort of give us a Taiwanese perspective. Well, today we have solved that deficiency, and today we've got Tristan Tang, who is an associate fellow at the Secure Taiwan Associate Corporation. It's a think tank in Taiwan. And, you know, I met Tristan. We've exchanged some messages and I've seen some of his writings. And you know, I thought who better to have on to talk about sort of the security dilemma for Taiwan and how do the Taiwanese see it and what are they planning than Tristan. So, Tristan, welcome to NucleCast.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to become your guest.
So, you know, Taiwan is sort of the hot button issue. And, you know, for many Americans and for the national security community in the United States, there is a belief that at some point that assuming Taiwan never agrees to unify with China, with the PRC, that China will use force to try to, you know, force unification. And, you know, many believe in this country and our allies in the region that the United States will assist in the defense of Taiwan. So for the Taiwanese, how do you see the security dilemma with China? What are your plans? You know, help we, you know, this is largely an American audience. And, you know, it's mostly folks in the nuclear community in the United States. Help us to understand how Taiwanese see it. And what do, you know, what do the Taiwanese people want? What are your plans? You know, how do you perceive the threat?
So, first of all, thank you for having me, Adam. And I have, you know, listened to a lot of podcasts that you produce, and I'm really, it's my pleasure to join. And for some background information, I am a Taiwanese. I born in Taiwan and I study all the way to my master's degree all in Taiwan for 2 decades. So yeah, so I think I can provide some, you know, local angle to issues. So one interesting story is that when the Nancy Pelosi visit back in 2022, I was not in Taiwan at the time. And so I, you know, watched the foreign news in the foreign countries, and it seems like the World War III just happened. But when I call back to my family, they just say, oh, everything is very, very, very normal. My father do what? My mother went to a supermarket, something like that. Just very normal, casual talks. And they seem not to, you know, very worried about the POA aircraft and naval vessels are, you know, cruising around Taiwan. So I would say, yes, the situation is quite, I would say, dangerous for Taiwan. And the POA's military invasion threat is real. But I would say Taiwanese still have some sense of, you know, chilling, you know, atmosphere. If you visit Taiwan, you will find that even if you visit Taiwan during a POA major exercise around Taiwan, the normal life just went down.
Right. And is that, so is there a sense in the West that the threat is greater than that sense that is in Taiwan? You know, because we hear about increasing, you know, PLA aircraft entering Taiwanese airspace and, you know, naval exercises. And for us, that's alarming. But for the Taiwanese, is that less alarming? Or is it, you know, we often say that, you know, for the United States, we have a tendency not to to really build our military forces until after we've been attacked. That's sort of a proud American tradition. Is I wonder, are the Taiwanese hoping the threat goes away? Or, you know, tell me more about that.
Yeah, so first of all, I would say that all Taiwanese want peace and want democracy. I have friends in DPP, Democratic Party, in Kuomintang, KMT, and in DPP, Taiwanese People's Party, right? So we all agree that we want peace, we want democracy, but how to feel the, how to maintain the stability of the cross relations, different parties has different view. But so if we go back to the story that I just mentioned back in Nancy Pelosi's visit in, back in 2022, I think my parents, they know the situation is quite tense, I would say, in the background, in their mind. Of course, the news report in Taiwan would broadcast the military operation around Taiwan. But they has a sense of chilling, a sense of, you know, calm, and doesn't worry about that. I think the essence of that is because our, you know, Ministry of National Defense did a great job to intercept the POA aircraft and to cruise, the Navy can cruise around Taiwan to prevent the POA Navy to harass our, you know, fishermen, fishing boats, or other commercial ships. So I would say we want peace, and people does acknowledge the issue, the threat, but yeah, life goes on.
So there has been some expansion of defense spending in Taiwan. It hasn't quite been as much as we perhaps would have expected for the perception of threat that we have. Can you talk to me about what kind of military activities and expansion of defense spending and kind of what activities? I've watched some, you know, I've seen some news stories. I watch a little bit of Taiwanese television, and there's news stories of sort of Taiwanese citizens taking, you know, voluntary training and, you know, to form like militias. So can you talk to me more about sort of your military preparedness and, you know, what is Taiwan doing and what are the citizens doing?
So I would think there are two levels. One is in governmental level and one is civilian level. As you rightly mentioned that in our society, there are several organizations that started training, start lessons, even start some seminar or discussion club to how to prepare our citizens to prepare for war, a very highly possible scenario many people think. So, for example, Kuma Academy, if I remember correctly, Heizhong Shuyuan, yeah, they start to train civilians to how to do EMT or something like that. And I would say the effect is quite good. Many of my friends join the sessions and even to pass some exam to better prepare themselves to, you know, prepare for potential invasion. And another side is our government side. As you mentioned, that we have increased, not as many would expect, but we did increase our defense spending and to better form our asymmetric warfare capabilities. We all know that China has a, you know, massive economy, so they can put a lot of resources, a lot of, you know, budget into their defenses. And so Taiwan is really hard to keep up. So we, in the past decades, we start to, you know, downsize our military, especially in the ground forces. But we start to have a better training in our ground forces, even though we did not significantly increase the amount, the personnel amount in our army. But I would say the training has a significant change to take the Hanguang exercise, a annual exercise, major exercise in Taiwan. So in Hanguang 41st, that just ended in last month. So a lot of new scenarios, a lot of new settings has happened. First thing is that our Ministry of National Defense integrated the Gray Zone operation period into the exercise. So it went from maybe just several days into a week or even more than a week, because before the exercise officially began, our reserve army actually have been mobilized. So they, our Ministry of National Defense think that the mobilization has to even be prepared before the Gray Zone operation began. And they probably, it is a research project on China's defense affairs that where I affiliated with, we think that Taiwanese military has started to think a certain level of Gray Zone operation. If the Gray Zone operation around Taiwan is really, really significant, it could be a sign that POA is prepared or determined to invade. So at that time, Taiwan would already start to mobilize our reserve forces rather than just wait for the first strike to begin, or even the amphibious forces begin to launch their invasion. So I would say in the civilian side and the governmental side, the defense preparedness has a significant improvement.
So it seems, one of the things is we think about from the American side, and we anticipate sort of how will China seek to gain control of Taiwan. We sort of think of, there's a, I don't know if you guys have dates yet, but sort of 2027 to 2029 is kind of a, when we think China may try to, attack Taiwan or use a military cordon and strangle Taiwan. It could play out in different ways. But we also think, you mentioned Gray Zone, there's sort of a general belief that, the Chinese will use cyber. They'll try to attack, shut down your power grids, affect banking. We also think they'll probably try to, satellites that you rely on for intelligence and for, transmission of data and other things, that they'll, try to deny you that. They might try to cut undersea cables. Is that sort of how you think and or what you're expecting for the Taiwanese or the Chinese? Sorry, is that what you think they'll do and how you sort of think they will start any kind of conflict or do you think it'll be sort of an invasion out of the blue? What are you guys thinking, and how, when you talk to one another and try to prepare, what are you talking about?
I think just as you're right in pointing out, a lot of year has been discussed in Taiwan, just like the researcher around the world has started to discuss. But I would say many Taiwanese researcher, defense researcher, doesn't think that a certain year is a definite year. The invasion decision would ultimately ordered by Xi Jinping himself. And of course, he would put a lot of thought, and a lot of factors would impact his decision. So a certain year, I would say no, a definitive year is has been reached a common sense within Taiwan's military community about which year the POA would launch an attack. And as you mentioned, that a lot of scenarios also being discussed. Recently, I have attended several war games held by a civilian in Taiwan. So one war game that I attend is hosted by Admiral Li Ximing, our former chief of staff. He hold a war game back in June, and the time is set in 2030. And at that time, of course, POA has more military might, and Taiwan has become more mature in our asymmetric warfare capabilities. So they did test the Grayson operation, they did test some quarantine scenario, but eventually the POA did invade and even put, I think, two army in east of Taiwan. But the purpose is combine the invasion and combine the blockade in this scenario. So researchers in Taiwan, including the retired generals and admirals, are trying to figure out what kind of scenarios, because we think all the scenarios are possible, because the military would provide options, provide a package to the decision maker. So they think, yeah, all the scenario, all the option is possible. And another war game that I participate recently is about energy. So I would say Taiwanese government did put a great thought into the quarantine, and the effect is not only on the commercial side or on the military side, but they do think about a lot of things, that how to maintain the resilience of Taiwanese society. And of course, it includes how to maintain the people's will to fight.
So it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. So we'll pause for a minute and then we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back and we're talking to Tristan Tang. We're talking about Taiwan. And so before the break, you were telling me about sort of some of the more recent war games in Taiwan and, you know, sort of what you're learning from those. I want to shift a little bit because I'm sure our listeners are really interested in sort of what do you think if this, you know, unfortunate and an unwanted invasion were to come? What's sort of the expectation amongst, you know, sort of the Taiwanese people and the Taiwanese leadership of the United States? Do they expect multiple, you know, carrier strike groups will come to your aid? Do you expect the Japanese? And I think, many of us and the Japanese are sort of coming to the conclusion that it would be hard for them not to be involved because, you know, they have territorial disputes with the Chinese as well. And so there's a fear that China will want to settle those. If they're going to go after Taiwan, they'll go after the other, you know, territories they have or that they're disputing with Japan and others. So kind of tell me, what are the Taiwanese expecting or thinking from us and other allies in the region?
Yeah, so first thing, I would say the opinion of Taiwanese people are quite divided. Those believing the U.S. would come whatever it take, whenever it happens. Of course, certain people did believe in that. Do believe in that. But there are also some has doubt in America. In Taiwan, we call it Yi Mei Run. Yeah. So some people would think that the U.S. would not come. And the promises of the U.S. government is not very solid. Yeah, some would argue that. So different Taiwanese people would have different belief. And
kind of about like what makes that distinction? Like who thinks the U.S. will come? Is it broken down by sort of age? Are older folks more supportive of the U.S. or is it urban, rural, or what makes the difference for those beliefs?
I wouldn't say it has a unifying or systematic category of this type of people. Some would argue that it is possibly because their political leaning, DPP leaning voters would probably more believe in U.S. would come whatever it takes whenever it happens. And the KMT people would, some KMT voters would tend to, you know, have some disbelief toward US. And some elder that I'm very familiar with, they think that the recent history in Afghanistan, in Iraq, that the US military eventually pull out, of course they have some strategic consideration or some military consideration, but they pointed out that the US eventually pull out and the local people would have to, you know, stand alone or to deal with whatever comes. So some people would, in Taiwanese people would think about this, but I would say most of the Taiwanese military experts, military researcher, do have a very calm and very, I would say, a knowledgeable thinking or knowledgeable understanding on the situation. And as I mentioned, I have personally participated in several war games recently. Almost all the Japanese participants, including some Japanese admirals and generals, they just being very frank that Japanese government is very hard to participate in a Taiwan contingency or even Taiwan warfare, because the law of in Japan would prohibit or not let the Japanese government to be too proactive or to involve too much in a military conflict in the Taiwan Strait. And on the other side, the U.S. participant of these war games, including some, of course, admirals, generals, or ex-officials in the previous government, they also mentioned that the essence of the cross-strait conflict is that whether Taiwanese people is willing to fight and whether we can resist the invasion as long as possible. So I would say the civilian side, the people would have their own belief, but in the expert community in Taiwan, I would say many people, most of you, totally understand the reality. It is not about whether to believe other people, other government, other countries will come to aid. I think if they can, we believe that people would help. But how to help, when to help, and involve to, how deep into the warfare, or even how the cross-strait conflict or Chinese invasion, what's the real factor behind it, would definitely impact the decision making in Washington, D.C., in Tokyo, or even in the capital of the European nations. Yeah, so I would say, my answer is quite divided.
Yeah, that's that's probably what we would expect, that there's varying opinion. So for Taiwan, if you're looking to deter the Chinese, what efforts are you looking at undertaking to deter any potential? I mean, and, we have in the United States, we have something called the DIME, diplomacy, information, military, and economic, that spans that's a pretty big spectrum. So across the various, ability of Taiwan to do that, what kind of activities are you undertaking to deter any kind of Chinese aggression?
Yeah, so to take the Hangzhou exercise this year as an example, many have observed that the Taiwanese military start to have some training or drill on the township battle. Because in the past, I would say our military tend to believe that we can defeat the enemy at least by the beachhead, or even let the POA could not successfully reach the beach, the red beaches. But this year, a lot of military drills or even maneuvers happened within the cities. For example, we have publish a special report in Secure Taiwan Associate Corporation that we pointed out one reserve brigade stationed in Taoyuan City has moved its tactical position from the beachhead to the inner city, to the downtown of Taoyuan City. Based on the publicly available information that we have gathered, it seems that it never happened before. So it is actually the first time that our reserve forces position inside the city, especially downtown. And their training sessions are all about township battle, rather than to conduct warfare in the beachhead or in the field. So I would say Taiwan start to change our way of defense or way of thinking in defense, and especially how to deter China. Everybody knows that Taiwan doesn't have nuclear weapons, and China does. So it would be vital for us to think about other option, other possibility to deter China from invading. And one thing for the so-called in-depth or a deep battle or something like that would start a attrition warfare against POA invasion, which probably would make Xi Jinping or the Chinese government to rethink about whether to invade Taiwan. Because if they invade, Taiwanese military or Taiwanese people has prepared for a long-term battle, we will not surrender easily, and they cannot easily take our town or even take our major cities. And it will be very bloody, and it would be very costly to them. And it is a possible thinking that our Ministry of National Defense or our Taiwanese government has started to employ, and especially trying to verify it this year.
So is there a perception among the Taiwanese that, you know, if the Chinese were to gain control of Taiwan, that things would kind of continue as normal, but with, you know, Chinese characteristics? Or is there an understanding that, you know, that, sort of, you know, if you think about Tibet or Xinjiang or elsewhere, that there may be wholesale, the Taiwanese people may be replaced by Chinese citizens. Is there kind of any discussion about what exactly it would mean for Taiwan and the Taiwanese people to lose that conflict?
So I would think that my family, my extended family, my friends, they don't talk about this kind of scenario in daily life. As I mentioned back in the Nancy Pelosi visit, it is not a common dialogue in our when we come back to home after work or something like that. So I would say this kind of discussion, mostly happen in the political arena. It is, political messaging from different parties in Taiwan would discuss whether a certain party or certain political leaning people would easily surrender to a Chinese invasion, and just to accept CCP's ruling. But I would say those who I know, most people in the three major parties in Taiwan, know that if CCP come, there will be no democracy. The so-called Chinese characteristics democracy is not the real Western democracy. So people all know that. So, and of course, some news regarding Taiwan would mention that the opposition party in Taiwan right now accuse our DPP government as autocracy or something like that. But I think deep down in every people's mind, we all know that CCP will not enforce a democracy, a real democracy in Taiwan.
So we're at that time in the show where I like to bring out Bob the Genie. So as I rub my magic lamp, Bob gives all guests three wishes, but they're, of course, those wishes have to, deal with the topics we've been discussing. So with that, Tristan,
yeah.
What is your first wish?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's very hard. For me personally, as a researcher on Chinese military, I would hope that our conventional war capability would not be significantly wear down or ignored during the process that Taiwanese government put a lot of emphasis on the asymmetric war fighting capabilities. Because to me, there seems to have two conflicted scenario happening. It is the D-Day versus everyday scenario. The D-Day scenario is that POA would launch invasion, military invasion, and we would have, the Taiwanese have to use this asymmetric war capability to counter China. But on the other hand, in peacetime, during the Great Zone Operation, we face a so-called everyday dilemma that the CCG, the Chinese Navy vessels, or even the maritime militia start to harass our fishermen in the Taiwan Strait, especially near Penghu Island in the southwestern side of the Taiwan Strait. And people will start to wonder, okay, we have lifted our military spending and our government really put a lot of emphasis to protect Taiwan. But why on earth? Our government could not protect us from harassed by the Chinese CCG or even military. So we need a certain level to improve or to upgrade our conventional forces for, of course, including the peacetime scenario. So it's a so-called D-Day versus everyday scenario to me. So personally, I would hope that our conventional war fighting capability would not be ignored during the process of this military building.
Wow, that's a good one. Okay, so that's wish number one. You got two more wishes. Okay, so what's wish number two?
Now, I wish the Taiwanese society could be less divided. Of course, I believe every people around the world would hope their politics, their government would be in a harmonious situation that no personal attack, too wild accusation to accuse a certain politician as traitor, even though without any proof, even without any formal investigation from our investigation bureau, right? So my second wish is that I hope the Taiwanese politics could be more peaceful, if possible.
Yeah. I think we wish that here in the U.S. as well. Okay, so that's a good wish. A united people is always good when you're facing a significant threat. So I understand that one. Okay, so your final wish.
Okay, so my final wish is related to this podcast or related to you, Adam. I truly hope that the United States could maintain its strength and its military might, especially in the Western Pacific, because I think the key factor behind whether Chinese invasion to Taiwan would be the U.S. military deployment and U.S. military capability in the Western Pacific. We can, even without the nuclear weapons, I would say the conventional forces of U.S. In Japan, in Korea, or even in the Philippines, or in Guam, would be a major factor that the Xi Jinping still not be able to order the invasion of Taiwan so far. So my third hope is that the U.S. could at least sustain the military capability or even thrive, even to upgrade the military might of U.S. That's my final wish.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those are good. Those are three good wishes. So you did a good job. So thanks for those. Of course, Tristan, thanks for joining us on this episode of Nuclecast. It was great to have sort of the Taiwan perspective. We've never had that before. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode. That was a great discussion with Tristan, to get a real, a Taiwanese perspective. We talk about it a lot. We war game it. We write about it. I think I looked at the number of articles, written on Taiwan, China, that kind of stuff. And it was like 500 million. It was a huge number, you know, on Google. So there's a lot of discussion about it, but it was good to get an actual Taiwanese perspective. So I enjoyed talking to Tristan. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunkel. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NuclearCast.